That was Claim Jumper from Johnny Copeland's new album, The Copeland Special. A couple of years ago, blues singer and guitarist Johnny Copeland moved to New York from Texas, where he'd lived since 1950, playing the Houston clubs and touring. When Village Voice music critic Gary Giddens heard him perform in New York, he called him the most imposing urban blues stylist to settle in these parts in recent memory. In the New York Times, critic Robert Palmer described his performance as stunning, with remarkable onstage energy and dynamism. Rounder Records has just released his first album as a leader, and it's called Copeland Special. His first single was called Rock and Roll Lily, and it was released in 1958 on Mercury when Copeland was 20 years old, and he's since recorded about 30 singles, one of which was a regional hit in Texas, and a new version of that tune, which is called Down on Bended Knee, is featured on this new album. Three top jazz saxophonists joined Copeland for this Rounder date, Arthur Blythe, Byard Lancaster, and George Adams. Copeland is in Philadelphia to perform tonight at Haverford College in Roberts Hall. That's at 8 o'clock. For information, you can call 896-6606. Johnny Copeland, it's really a pleasure to meet you, and I like your music very much.
I'm so glad to be here.
You know, I was reading a little bit about you, and I understand you used to prize fight. And I was thinking what a different trip it would be prize fighting in front of an audience and playing blues in front of an audience. Let's get a really different response.
Well, it both takes a lot of concentration.
I'll bet, yeah. When were you prize fighting? Before you started playing or during?
Oh, yeah, when I was real young, you know, real young. I was 15, 16, 17 years old, you know.
Yeah, I was also thinking it was lucky you didn't break a hand or anything.
Oh, yeah. I didn't do it that much, you know. I didn't really never have a trainer or nothing like that. I just trained myself, so I guess if I had a real trainer, I might have been pretty good.
Did you learn guitar yourself also?
Right, through a friend of mine by the name of Joe Hughes.
How did you pick it up?
Well, you know, my father was a blues singer, guitarist, so it was destined for me to sing the blues.
You first played acoustic guitar?
Well, the first one I had was acoustic. It was my father's guitar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How'd you get introduced to electric guitar?
Well, after I moved to Houston, I kept playing acoustic. The first one I bought was another acoustic. I bought another acoustic guitar, and I started learning. And then, well, the clubs wanted electric guitars because the great Mr. T.B. Bone Walker had introduced the electric blues, electric guitar, and it was doing real well. So everybody was going electric guitar then.
You got to play really different when you're playing on electric guitar, right?
Well, not really. Not really, you know. I had a guy to tell me almost to say, when you're playing electric guitar, say you can hide a lot of your mistakes.
That's not true, is it?
No, not really. You can hear the mistakes better.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it's amplified mistakes. So yeah. You were really impressed with T-Bone Walker when you first heard him.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
What kind of influence did he have on you?
The whole thing, him being from Texas and singing the blues and, you know, doing it well. I liked the arrangements he used, you know, the music. He used good musicians all the time. He had good arrangements. His music was real good all the time.
Is it a true story that your band's first instruments were bought by the club owner who booked you?
Right, yeah.
Can you tell us that story?
The first electric instruments we had, yeah. Well, I was standing in front of the music store one day, and this guy by the name of Jesse was standing there, you know, we was both looking at this guitar, you know, and he said, I said, it's a pretty guitar. He said, yeah, sure, it's pretty, you know. And then he asked me, did I play guitar? I said, yeah. And then that's when he told me he had a band. He said if he could get somebody that would play for him and didn't have no instruments, he'd buy them for him, you know. So I told him, I said, well, I'll be down there tonight with my band. So we went out there with all acoustic guitars, three guitars, and it was five of us all together, right? We called ourselves the Five Dukes of Rhythm. But we had, like, three acoustic guitars. So we went out and played that. And he liked us, so he bought all the equipment for us.
What kind of material were you playing then?
Blues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to another selection from your album, then we'll talk about your move from Houston to New York. We're going to hear It's My Own Tears. Do you want to say anything about this before we hear it?
Well, no, just listen.
Okay, we'll do that. This is it from Johnny Copeland's new album, It's My Own Tears.
Don't you worry about what she do. If she satisfy me, she should please you. 'Cause I love her and I will. till the day I die. If she stays out all night long, don't say nothing about her, because it's me she doing wrong, and I love her.
From his new album, that was Johnny Copeland and a recording of It's My Own Tears, and the saxophone solo was done by Bayard Lancaster, who's from Philadelphia. A couple of years ago, you moved from Houston, where you'd lived since about 1950,
right,
to New York, and you now live in Harlem. Why did you decide to move?
Oh, well, you know, the music business was real good for down there for a long time. Then starting 68, it started kind of going downhill a little bit. By 74, it was all the way out. This disco was coming in, and I wasn't really working like I had been working, so I'd come up here and try. I had a friend live here in New York, lived up in New York, and he said, well, hey, why don't you come up to New York, you know? So I come up with him and started trying to get my thing together in the big, the music industry.
How do you start doing that?
That's right. How do you start doing that in New York? You just start.
Did you bring your guitar to places and show up and sit in with other musicians?
Well, yeah, I did. I did sit in. I went to Harlem. I mostly sat in up in Harlem, you know, with musicians around up there. And I started working around up there somewhat. I worked at Top Club there, 125th and St. Nicholas. I worked there about 2 or 3 years, you know. So it was really just the one. I played another club, when I didn't play the Top Club, I played there at this other club. So I really didn't ever move out of that 125th Street district right there, you know.
Is there much of a difference between the kinds of audiences that show up in New York and in Houston and the way they react to your music?
Not really, no. When people enjoy your music, they pretty well react the same way wherever you are.
What's the music scene like in Houston? I've never been down there, so I really wouldn't know what to expect.
Well, we had a real good music scene. Like I say, up to 68, we had a real good music scene. Nothing local music scene. And we never had a... Now we're having a... The majors, it's getting better for us down there, you know. But we got music, man, that come out from 45 to 55 that... Nobody never heard, you know. But now it's getting better because everybody's getting pretty good contracts and pretty good deals down there now and beginning to go abroad, getting out. I see a young kid by the name of, he had a record come out called Real Mama Jamma. It's from Dallas. He was, at this period when I left there, he was trying to get something going, you know. So it's a lot of artists coming out down there now. It's making it in major, you know. But from 55 up to 65, didn't too many get out of there.
Did you ever feel like you ought to start playing disco in order to make a living when in around 68 you felt that the, I guess,
well,
wasn't 68
I guess
disco,
I would. I did think in a, for a term I jumped, you know, did it a little while, and I got so disgusted with it. After it started growing, it kept getting bigger and bigger, so I decided to stop messing with it. I just take small jobs, right, and wait till it run its course.
Well, you've also toured with Aretha Franklin or played with her in the studio. I'm not sure which that was.
Well, I played with her in Houston when she first come through there. When she was on Columbia Records, she'd come through there and she needed a band. So I did 3 days with her, me and my band.
Did you think she'd become as famous as she did?
Nah.
Why not?
I knew she could sing, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I knew she could really sing. But she didn't act like she was too interested in it, really.
In singing or in becoming famous?
Neither one of them. She still don't act like she's too interested in it to me. You know, she like just Aretha. You know, she just herself. So she wasn't, you know, she was just regular. She didn't act like she was interested in singing at all. You know, she just regular person. Mm-hmm. Me and her had, like, we had lunch together and I talked to her a while, you know. She was just... nice person. But she was like, I think she was getting ready to have her first kid at this time, and she was kind of irritable a little bit, you know.
The record business, and I guess maybe particularly for blues musicians, is infamous for a lot of rip-offs, and musicians frequently don't get what's coming to them. Have you ever had any problems with that?
Well, I guess we all have that problem. If you don't get the right staff around you and get it going in the right manner, you can always, that business is the business. You know, if you don't get the business right, then it's all up to you getting it right as you go along, I guess.
So you try to know that yourself or to have people around you who know it for you so you don't have to mess with it?
To have people around you and know yourself, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another selection from your album, and this is called Everybody Wants a Piece of Me. is this you really expressing the way you feel now? Or?
Well, I don't know what made me do that. I needed one more record for the song, you know. And I mean, I needed one more song for the record. And I had been to Texas trying to write a song, and I had... you know, went everywhere trying to write a song. I finally got back to New York and I wrote this, Everybody Want a Piece of Me.
What were you thinking about when you wrote it?
Oh, well, what do you think about it? You know, I was just I take hook lines like I say, everybody want a piece of me. That's a good hook line to me, you know. So I write a song with it, you know.
Well, great. Well, let's hear it. And this is from Johnny Copeland's new album. Mm-hmm. That's Johnny Copeland, who's my guest now on Fresh Air. A lot of people assume that the songs that blues singers write are very autobiographical, that every time you hear a song about a lover who's cheated on you, that must mean that last week some lover cheated on you, or that, you know, if it's a song about falling in love, that 2 weeks ago you fell in love. How much do your songs really, talk about what has just happened to you?
Well, not many. Not many. I'm a happy person, you know. I'm very happy.
You are happy?
I'm very happy, you know. I just like I say, I catch lines, and I write about it, you know. If somebody might say something to me, I write about it, you know. You got to be happy to be open to listen, right?
Right, but you're supposed to have to suffer to sing the blues, but that's just an old cliche.
Well, maybe some people do. You know, it takes different things for different people, you know. I don't know. I don't look at it as a suffering thing. You know, everybody got the blues. It don't make no difference what the condition is. The blues is the feeling, mood.
Blues is the chord changes also. Is it hard to solo a lot on blues changes so much?
Oh, no. It gets, you like to go along with more. You do it, you know, like say trucking along on the same 12 bars. You get to enjoying it, you know.
You must know those 12 bars pretty intimately.
Yeah, you learn them pretty good.
What did you expect when you moved to New York? I bet a lot of musicians have, you know, told you what New York would be like and what you should expect when you live there. Was it anything like what you had imagined?
No, because I'd been looking at all the movies and all this you know, and it was nothing like that. It's really a beautiful community. Although you have everything there, you have the good and the bad, but it's mostly good, and you find what you're looking for there, you know. If you're looking for something good, you find it. If you're looking for bad, you can find it. Anything you're looking for, you can find in New York, right? So it's really good, you know.
So from movies, you thought of a lot of bad things.
You draw your opinion from things you see, you know, and things you read, and mostly everything you read is bad.
Uh-huh.
So you, that's why most people draw their opinion about the city. But really, the city is good.
Did you see the film The Blues Brothers?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of it?
I loved it.
Did you?
I did. I really did. I thought it was very straightforward and to the point, and told the whole story about the suffering of this music with the musicians and the whole bit, because it's pretty well that way, in a sense, you know.
Akron and Belushi through that whole Blues Brothers routine interested a lot of young white teenagers in that kind of rhythm and blues.
Well, as teenagers come along, you know, teenagers get better. You know, they go to learn, and they get a little better with it, and they bring it on back.
Uh-huh.
You know, Blues Brothers was wonderful. They did a wonderful job. I liked the music on the album, and I think they did a wonderful job. But, you know, the best is yet to come. So the kids, when they get it, they're gone with it, you know.
You know the kind of band with the horn arrangement where the horn players, like, have steps to do, mm-hmm. you know, and the breaks? Mm-hmm. Do you like mm-hmm. that kind of thing in your band?
Mm-hmm. Not really. We do some of it. You know, we let them do back. Let you do what you feel. If you feel like moving, move. If you feel like playing, playing. You know, just play your music if you feel like it. But we move somewhat. You like what you're doing, you're going to move anyway, huh? I saw a guy one day working at a bowling alley. He was sweeping, you know, and he was dancing and sweeping, you know. So it was him. It wasn't a job. It was him, right? He was enjoying it.
So you don't have anything choreographed, because, you know, with some of the bands, three steps forward and four back, and swing to the left.
Like just follow your feelings.
It's kind of interesting that, you know, you speak softly and sing so loudly.
I have a problem. I'm shy.
How can you be shy when you're used to performing on stage like that and singing such really gutsy material?
Something about the combination ain't come together good yet. No, not really. I don't know. I just don't talk loud, you know. And sometimes when I be singing, I be at home by myself singing, you know. I be singing too loud to myself, you know. And then when I speak soft. And then sometimes I can speak loud, you know. It all depends.
You sing in the shower like us mortals do?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you write your material?
Wherever. I have always had a habit in my life, all through my life, ever since I can remember. I always be, when I walk or move, and I'm whistling all the time. That's been my, ever since I was a little kid, I walk and I whistle, you know. So I guess that's, I be studying the music through that, I guess. I don't know.
As we can hear on your new album, you've been doing some playing with some of the New York-based jazz musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And the three on your album are George Adams and Byard Lancaster and mm-hmm. Arthur Blythe. It's interesting, the combination of rhythm and blues and the jazz musicians. Of course, some of them are really influenced by rhythm and blues and come out of a rhythm and blues background.
Right.
So is it any different for you playing with people who are now in the jazz scene?
Well, I look at it like this. Originally, George and Arthur, you know, they come from the same area I come out of, you mm-hmm. know, in age and music and all, right? So they were playing it anyway, you know, but they decided later to do and develop into jazz or whatever, right? But they already knew the music that was original, you know. Right. So what we got really out of George and Arthur was the original thing they ever did, right? The original way they ever played, you know. And I think George did it wonderful, and I think Arthur did too.
Do you think there's a Texas sound?
I got it. This is Texas sound.
Yeah, it is.
Right. Right. What's Texas sound? Horns, rhythm, and a honky tonk guitar. That's Texas sound, right? So we the Texas sound.
What did you want to do on your? This is your first album under your name. What mm-hmm. What did you want the final album to show? What were all the things you tried to fit in on it?
On this album here? Oh, how can I tell you? We worked on this album a long time. Not in the just the, you know, the thoughts and the putting it together, you know, the pictures. And we worked like, what, I guess 7 days on just the pictures alone. I mean, work like days work, you know, all day, you know, taking pictures all day, trying to get something that look original. So we put a lot of work into this album, and we put a lot of thoughts into it. Kenny Vangil did a lot of thinking with the music, and he changed the music a lot. And Danny Doyle did a lot of thinking in the producing area. And me as a singer, I had to try to think along, catch up with both of them. So it kept me thinking, you know, because I got to try to get something that's going to please all of us, him, me, and Kenny, you know. And that ain't easy.
I'm sure you're pleased with the album.
Oh, well, we're very pleased with it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Oh, thank you.
I want to thank you a lot for coming. I've really enjoyed meeting you and speaking with you.
I wish I'd have got here early.
Well, I know it's a long trip, and I never know what traffic's going to be like. I hope the concert goes really well for you tonight.